The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on August 2nd, 1995 in Melbourne, Australia. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, Chapter 9, Verse 37 through 39.
These are the desires of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wants to see the devotion to the Supreme Lord distributed all over the world. To see the people get love for Krishna and to see everyone become free from the miseries of old age, death, birth and disease. This is the Lord's special mercy. When Krishna desires that something happen, then it happens. In the Mahabharata, it's mentioned about the Kurukshetra war. And if you study the different personalities and the people, the armies, one can draw a logical conclusion like Duryodhana did that, he was invincible. He had grandfather Bhishma, he had Dronacharya, he had a big army. He had Karna, he had so many Maharatis. So, and the Pandavas didn't have as many kings supporting them. And Arjuna was a much newer general than Bhishma or Dronacharya. So somehow Duryodhana, he could have avoided the whole war, but he was very confident that I'll be victorious, so why should I give in? Even at the beginning Arjuna got shaky feet that whether what's the use of fighting, seeing so many people die. But there's a whole hidden situation behind the war. But in any case, the Lord, He had made His decision that no, He'd already decided who was going to win and who was going to lose. And so He told Arjuna that you should fight, but don't think about winning or losing. Just fight on the principles of religion. Just fight to please Me. Prabhupada mentioned many times, fighting on a principle of religion is much more important than non-violence. So, as a result, of course, after everything was said and done, Arjuna, he never changed. He was the general of the Pandava side from the beginning to the end. But on the opposing side, they had to change the general so many times. Right, there was what? Bhishma, the Dronacharya. Then after that it was what? Karna. Then after Karna there was one day someone was there. It went through many changes, I remember. Dhritaratha. He was also general for a while. I can't remember now. They go through so many changes and in the end they lost. These are kind of historical examples to show how the Lord is will it's always done. Of course you could, there may be many other different kinds of examples. The potency to do something is coming down from the Lord. So in every universe there's an expansion of the Supreme Lord. Expansion means that the Supreme Lord can take many forms, and some of the forms are almost complete, 94%. And then Krishna is the full form. But they're all the same person, just that manifesting in different forms. So in this universe there's the Vishnu form, in every universe. So Lord Vishnu maintains the things. He comes when there's some really big emergency in the devas, the administrative heads, they want him to come and straighten things out, and he can come and he straightens things. Generally, the devas, they all work together to keep the order in the universe. Some devas approached Lord Chaitanya when he was in the womb of his mother, and they pleaded to him that, please have your mercy upon us. You come in so many different incarnations, in different form of half man, half lion, form of the fish, form of Matsya, Kurma, Varaha. You come in the form of Lord Ramchandra. You come in so many different forms, and in all these forms you give out liberation. Very rarely do you give out bhakti. But in this form, you're coming as a devotee, you're giving out love for Godhead. Love of Godhead very freely. So we are your devotees, we're coming from the heavenly planet. We don't want any more material blessings, because we've already got enough of that in the heavenly planets. In fact, there's so much sense gratification in the heavenly planets that there's practically hardly any suffering. We only have two problems. Sometimes we get attacked by the demons, and we have to fight with them. That's the main problem we face. And the other problem is that there's so much happiness there, material happiness, that we forget about serving you. The determination to serve you in pure devotion doesn't come. And this is the greatest suffering, to get this kind of virtual happiness from the material senses and be deprived of the real spiritual happiness coming from the level of the self. So we want your blessings in this incarnation, to be able to serve you and have your pure devotion. So these devas, they're living in a very elevated situation, long life, happiness. People who are pious in this world, they go to heaven. Heaven is another part of the material world, according to the Vedas, where people can enjoy a better life materially. But from there, again, we have to come back down, according to the laws of nature. Beyond heaven, there's the spiritual world, which is totally outside of the material world. And that's the actual spiritual kingdom of God. People who are concerned about doing material welfare for others, they go to one of the higher spiritual planets, material planets, heavenly planets. Only those who have actually developed love for Godhead, they can go back to the spiritual world. So the devas, that's what they wanted. They didn't want this material happiness. We can say that in the Puranas and the history of the universe, there's a few major wars that were held between the devas and the demons. Massive star wars. Very interesting. One was held a long time ago when Hiranyakashipu was the leader, before he got all his blessings. And they had this massive, all the demons came out and started to attack all the devas. So there was Kartikeya, who was the general of the devas. There was Ganesh, there was Yamaraj, there was Indra, who was the king of the devas. There was Sunny, and Bayu, and all the different leading devas and their soldiers. Then all the demons came out. Demons are riding on their own mounts and chariots and animals. Devas are riding on elephants and chariots. In the Padma Purana, it mentions there's a massive battles, this is whatever you see in Star Wars, is nothing compared to these battles. You know, I tell you, amazing. All kinds of mystical weapons, nuclear weapons, all kinds of missiles, all projected through mantras and bows and arrows. Different flying saucers and things. It's really amazing. The kind of wars that they were having. And at one point, each of the devas met with one of the major demoniac people in the universe and had this massive fight. And then, so one after another, Kartikeya, he defeated his person. Ganesh was fighting with the son of Tripurasur, known as Tripura. And he said, I challenge Ganesh, your father killed my father, so I'm going to kill you. Because Lord Shiva had killed Tripurasur by knocking his flying ships out of the air when he fought with the devas on another occasion. So he led so many weapons against Ganesh, and then Ganesh, he had his mystical weapons and he led them back against him. And then this demon was riding on a big elephant, and the elephant attacked the rat that Ganesh rides over. But Ganesh's mystical rat got real big and started attacking the elephant. There's this gigantic war going on between the carriers. So finally, Ganesh defeats him, the long effort. Then somehow there was a demon, Madhu. And Madhu, he came awake. And he started to challenge Indra. And there's a really long battle with Indra. At one point, then he tried a ploy. Because what happened, that he actually was defeating Indra. And what he did is then, using his mystic power, he changed all the demons to make them look like devas. So then all the enemies, then the demons, they knew who was who. But the devas, they saw that it's like everybody in the football team, only one side knows who the other side is. But the one side sees everybody's the same. They keep passing the ball to the wrong person. So the demons who looked like devas, they were killing the devas. And the devas couldn't figure out, why is my friend killing me? And they didn't know, you know, like, why should I kill him? And so it became very confusing. And then, seeing this, and Lord Brahma requested Vishnu, that you please solve this. Because, so Vishnu, then he was just kind of watching the whole thing. So then, he knew who was he. So he let the Sudarshan Chakra so he could kill all the demons that had taken the form as devas. And so then all the Sudarshan Chakra was killing all the demons in the form of devas, but the devas seeing the Sudarshan Chakra is killing devas. So they go, why is it that Vishnu is against us now? Why is he killing us? You know, they got kind of confused. So taking this advantage of the confusion, then Madhu, he turns himself in the form looking just like Lord Shiva, riding on the Nandi bull. And he comes out and he said, Vishnu, I challenge you because you have killed all the devas, now I'm going to punish you. And Vishnu says, I know you're this Madhu demon and you're just taking the form of Shiva. So they had a fight and then Vishnu sent his weapon against him, and so then Madhu made it believe that he was killed but quickly changed his form again, let the mystical dead form of what looked like Shiva lie there, and then came in the form of Durga. Said, you killed my husband. You killed the devas. Now I'm going to kill you. This is another strategy. And then, so Vishnu says, you're still the Madhu demon. You're just hanging out, you know. Krishna is the master of all mystic powers, so you can't be bewildered by these things. So then In the form of Durga, he attacks, and again he annihilates that body. So then Madhu shows there's dead Shiva, dead Durga. Now he goes in a subtle form, and he influences Kartikeya. That look at Vishnu, I just killed your mother and father. And Kartikeya got like so overwhelmed that suddenly, you know, in emotion, he was going to attack Vishnu, Morgan. And then Brahma, he quickly came and stopped Morgan and said, look at, there's your mother and father up there in the netherworld. This is all a mystical confusion created by these demons, by the black magic. You know. And then, you know, Morgan came to his senses. And so in the meantime, this Madhu had been like very much injured, and he was, see, he came back and he got some rejuvenation from Sukracharya, the guru of the demons, and then he came back and he had a very big battle with Lord Vishnu, and then finally Vishnu liberated him, and he became known as Madhusudana, the killer Madhu demon. But Madhu is a very powerful demon. He could create so much confusion, even Morgan got confused, everyone got confused. Except for Brahma and Shiva and Durga, everyone else was bewildered, and of course Vishnu. So, then there was another big universal war, which happened after the churning, when the devas and the demons were churning, and then after all the devas got the nectar and the demons got cheated and they got really angry, and that time that was headed by Bali Maharaj. And then they started attacking all the devas. And there was another huge war with Indra leading the battle at that time. In Kartikeya, everyone was there. Even that time, Bhadrakali was fighting, as well as Lord Shiva. And they also got in trouble. And then they prayed to one of Bali Maharaj. He was given such a hard time by Indra that he created a gigantic mystical mountains and things to be showering down all kinds of flaming trees and boulders and all kinds of things. And there was created such a situation that floods and all kinds of illusions were created. The demons, devas were getting killed in these illusions, and even Indra didn't know really what to do. So then he had to pray to Lord Vishnu, and Vishnu appeared and removed all these things. So then, by his transcendental potency. So there's an interesting story that one time like this, sometimes the devas and demons, they have these they have these wars. As long as Vishnu doesn't enter in, the demons stand half a chance sometimes. Usually the devas are more powerful, but there was a similar fight between the devas and the devas. And every time the demons would get, this was a Tripura type, every time the demons would get killed, they'd come back, their bodies would be taken back and dipped in this special well of nectar that Maya Danava had, and they would become rejuvenated. So it was getting very frustrating because Lord Shiva would be killing the demons and then they'd come back alive again the next day to fight again. And it was like, how many times do you have to kill the same person? So then Lord Vishnu took the form of a cow and Brahma took the form of a small calf. Just wandered right into the camp of the demons and went right over to where the well was. And then Vishnu in the form of the cow just drank all the water out of the well, all the nectar, all their special medicine that could repair bodies instantly and bring it back to life. Can you imagine you had a bottle of that to market here in the world? So when Maya Asura saw someone told, look at, there's a cow drinking all the nectar. And he saw the nectar is almost gone. Then he realized, this is Lord Vishnu. No one else could have done this on us. And then he said, Doesn't matter whether you're a deva, or whether you're a demon, or whether you're human, whatever you might be. Once the Supreme Lord decides your fate, then that's it. Nobody can change it. You know, until that point, you stand half a chance. But once he's decided, then the game's over. So in the Puranas, it shows that you have very big universal powers. Good powers and demoniac powers. It's interesting, Prabhupada, he raised the point in this purport of all these universal fights, that the real solution is that everyone, devas and demons, should take up Krishna consciousness. Because this is a transcendental process, and this way everyone can get love for Godhead and everyone can be delivered. And once the Lord makes a decision, and that's it. So here the Lord has already decided he wants to see the world flooded in love for Godhead. He's just looking for persons to work through. Persons that take up his order, then they get empowered by him and they'll be able to give love to other people. Now it's a different war. It's not a war with violence and cutting people and cutting demons and others. It's a spiritual conquest where people's hearts are conquered and they're given love for Godhead and they are freed from their illusion and suffering. What it is basically the demoniac nature of the people is killed, but the person isn't killed. Everybody's turned into pure goodness, transcendental. So when the Kurukshetra battle was fought, that was also really a battle between the devas and the demons. All the demons had taken birth as that time in Dwapara Yuga, they took birth as the kingly families. In fact, when Duryodhan got defeated after the time of the Gandharvas, there was the time when the Gandharvas fought with Duryodhan and defeated him, and then the Pandavas came and rescued him. That's a famous time when Yudhisthira said, between ourselves we're 100 against 5, but against the rest of the world we're 105 against everyone. And so they defeated the Gandharvas, where Duryodhana was captured by them. So he was so embarrassed that he wanted to give up fighting, commit suicide. And he was taken by the demons to their planet. They kind of took him, and he never remembered what they told him. But it's recorded that they took and they explained to him that we have empowered you to defeat the agents of the demigods, of the devas on the planet. We have that in this battle of Kurukshetra, you're going to be victorious, you're going to have Dronacharya, we're going to arrange it, you're going to have Dronacharya, you're going to have Bhishma, you're going to have all these kings. The massive power is going to be on your side. You're going to be able to defeat the Pandavas. And the Pandavas are all the descendants of Surya, Indra, Yamaraj, and so on. So they're really going to get the devas and the demons going against each other. So when Duryodhana was put back, he couldn't remember exactly what they said, but he had this complete... He was reprogrammed by the demons that you're going to be victorious. And that's why he wouldn't listen to anybody when they told him not to fight. And the demons thought that this was our chance we can defeat through Duryodhana, but again they were foiled. We don't know what's the influences on the world, but it seems in Kali Yuga there's a lot of demonic influences going on. Even other people want to have a peaceful... Most people are innocent, but they get influenced. You have the demoniac influence. You have so many demoniac kind of things going on in the world. Pedophiles, you know, still people want to do nuclear tests, you know, they want to have nuclear wars. Not something that's really totally out of the picture yet. You have all the things going on in Bosnia. You have so many different kinds of things going on in the world, which show that just pretty much still a demonic influence in the world. And saw little proxy wars being fought between the devas and the demons on a small scale. The Prabhupada said, actually, we're not, although it looks like we're on the side of the devas, but actually we're not, even Krishna is not really taking one side or the other. They're all his descendants, in one sense. They're all part of his creation. But the demons, they don't believe in God, generally, so they never ask God for any help. And the devas, the godly people, they ask God, please give us your help. So he just reciprocates. He's neutral. You don't want my help? I won't give it. You want my help? Okay, I'll give it. So that way he's neutral. But actually, he's transcendental to this battle of good and evil in the material sense. Because there's a higher status of good, absolute good, which is far beyond the material good and bad. The devas are his devotees, and they work on his behalf. And therefore, they always look to him for help, and he helps them. Those who oppose the discipline in the universe, the demonic influences, and they face this problem. The Prabhupada, he mentioned that we are, as devotees, we're serving Krishna and Balaram, we're serving Nityayangur. We're also transcendental to this whole conflict between good and evil, in the mundane sense. We don't want people just to be good materially. We don't want to, you know, annihilate the bad people. We want to see everybody become transcendentally situated. We want to see the bad, the demonic nature in demonic people eradicated. We want to see even the good people transcend even their mundane goodness and come up to a higher level of transcendental vision. So externally, pure goodness looks like goodness from a material point of view, almost. But it goes beyond material goodness. So anyway, all these stories and universal wars and that, I just want to try to give a few examples. Ultimately, wherever Krishna enters into that, whatever he expresses his will, then it's already a fait accompli. So long as he doesn't express his will, then things may be up for grabs. But in this case, Krishna himself is expressing his desire. I want to see the fruits of love of God distributed all over the world. And I want the people to take this up and to do it. So that means it's going to happen. It's just a question that can happen through you, it can happen through me, it can happen through anybody who wants to take up the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what we want to do is that Lord Chaitanya wanted every human being to take it up. So we're trying to facilitate people, as I discussed yesterday, that they can take it up. Especially, there's a special mandate for people who are born in Indian culture. Bhara bhumite haila manushya janma jar janma shartak kori koro poro pukar. One who has taken his birth in as a human being in the land of India, Bharatvarsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. Bhagavad Prabhupada said Bharatvarsha in some translation means the whole planet of Bharat as compared to Bhumandal. But in the more limited, in the more specific sense, Bharat means India. So Prabhupada meant that said that human life is specially meant for God realization, as stated in the Vedanta Sutra, Atata Brahma Jigasa. Anyone who takes birth in the land of India, Bharatvarsha, has a special privilege of being able to take advantage of the instructions and guidance of the Vedic civilization. He automatically receives the basic principles of spiritual life. For 99.9% of Indian people, even simple village farmers and others who are neither educated nor sophisticated, believe in the transmigration of the soul, believe in past and future lives, believe in God, and actually want to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead or His representative. These ideas are the natural inheritance of a person born in India. And he goes on to explain the glories of India. Of course, when Prabhupada came here to Melbourne, because most of the Indians had come to Australia, coming here to get a job, to get economic development. So when Prabhupada landed here, the AIDS newspaper man asked him, Swamiji, you're coming from a poor country, so what are you to, we're a rich country, Australia, so what are you coming here to get? What are you coming to take from us? You know, welcome, you know. And then Prabhupada said, I'm not come here to take anything from you. I come here to save you from a cat and dog's life. And if he could give it to Prabhupada, he'd give it too. Anyway, he was surprised. What do you mean we're living a cat and dog life? And then Prabhupada said, well, cats and dogs, what do? They eat. They may be eating in the ground or anywhere in a bowl. And you're eating in a big restaurant, but eating's the same, isn't it? And then cats and dogs, they sleep. They may sleep in a little sandbox or anywhere, but you may sleep in a big hotel or something, but sleeping is the same. Dogs, they're having a sex life, and well, you're also doing the same thing. Maybe you do it in a more sophisticated manner, but the activity amounts to the same. And then dogs are fighting. They're using fangs and teeth and claws, and you're using rockets and machine guns and so on, but the fighting is still there. So this is the only purpose of life. If you don't know beyond this, then what is it but a glorified royal cat and dog life? Real human life means that there's a higher purpose, a higher spiritual purpose. So I come to save you from the cat and dog life and give you that what is the real higher purpose of life. Prabhupada actually sent me the news clipping that came out the next day and said, Swamiji has come to save us, come to save us from a cat and dog's life. Then the subheading was, he's come to hound us. Australians are famous for their humor. So, the Prabhupada, he came to give a higher purpose to life. He didn't come with the illusion of that people in the West, just because they had more material things, were actually happier. You could see that they were suffering. He actually was crying sometimes, so how people are suffering here. I mean, even if the devas feel they're suffering and they don't have kind of sufferings that we have, they live a very comfortable life. And they feel frustrated that they don't have spiritual happiness. I want to speak in a place where we have car accidents and disease and old age and so many cancer and so many problems. Hatred and prejudice and ignorance. So, Srila Prabhupada, he had that vision. He really wanted to help people. So here's an example of someone from Bharat Varsha who's come to fulfill the order of Lord Chaitanya and help others. Can you imagine if everyone from India would take up as part of their role to actually give some of the great cultural wealth that they have received by being in such a spiritual land? Prabhupada, he said, we can use Western technology, but we should combine it with spiritual culture of India. The two things together can make a perfect world. India right now is economically crippled. Sometimes he would say that the blind and the lame man. He said the West is like very strong economically, but spiritually they're practically blind. So he said if you have a blind man and you have a lame person and you put them together, you can put the lame person on the shoulder of the blind one who's got a big body, but he can't see. Together to make a team. Okay, go here, go there. Okay, then they work in a teamwork. He saw that spirituality. Of course, the modern Indian leaders, they don't also even know their own spiritual heritage very deeply. Although they may have an edge, they're not the real ambassadors for this. For this vision, Prabhupada was the actual spiritual ambassador. And he's empowered so many others. So it's really something that the world needs. And we can see that UAM is not able to really solve the problems. It looks like they're just going to pull out and say, okay, let all the people in Yugoslavia fight to the finish and see who's left at the end. And it doesn't really seem that they're able to solve the problem. The problems are not solvable simply by military means. People have to have a change of heart. They have to actually see things differently. So that came, he was empowered and sent out to spread the message to others. Well, after a while, you know, things changed, and people got married, and they have other responsibilities, and things didn't happen. But actually, we see that in Lord Chaitanya's movement in India, most of the people were also married people, and they would just preach in their spare time. They would make some time to go and tell others about Krishna consciousness. You know, some of the people were brahmacharis and sannyasis, but the vast majority were married people. And they also were spreading the movement. So this is the order of Lord Chaitanya. All classes of devotees, they should combine together and make a combined effort. Now, if anybody ever gets the opportunity to represent Lord Chaitanya, you're going to experience a very sublime feeling that you've never experienced any other time in your life. Anyone who's been able to do Sankirtan or be able to tell people about Krishna, they can start to taste a special happiness in representing God, which is just totally unique. It's from the spiritual platform. I think that the devotees who are preaching full time have been able to get the taste of that nectar. And we would like to see everybody get a taste of that. That can also fill out their own experience and realization about what is Krishna consciousness. Otherwise it's probably very difficult. There's that story about trying to understand what Krishna consciousness is. That there was a bee, and the bee wanted to, the bee came and saw there was a honey bottle. So then the bee could see the honey, the smell was kind of permeating around. But he couldn't enter into the bottle, so then he kind of backed up and started, you know, revving up his wings. The rain will flow at full speed to the bottle and BOOM! Bang into the bottle and couldn't figure. He can't see the bottle, he just sees the honey. There was this column of honey, why can't I get in it? You know, what's this? Why is it so hard? Gets back again and tries. And again. He does that a few times until he tends to go a little batty. Somehow he gets on the top of the bottle, and the smell is really strong there, and he thinks, aha, I have reached it. I have reached the honey, you know. Basically, he was punch drunk, and then got overwhelmed by the smell. He never really reached the honey. A lot of people, they get real close to God realization. They get really close to it, but they never actually reach it. And they get so close that they think that I reached it, but they actually haven't. And we want people to actually realize. So the way, you have to unscrew the honey bottle and you have to go in tight. So the honey is actually doing the devotional service to Krishna. That is really what the nectar is. And the most confidential devotional service that we can do is helping Lord Chaitanya distribute this Krishna consciousness to all the other human beings. So we do hope that everyone will take advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Give it out to everyone, and also don't forget to take it yourself. Take the fruit and eat it. If it's a mystical fruit, so you can eat it, it still remains. It's like, you know, and you can give it to others. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Hearing about all these universal battles, I just think how pleased all the devas are. I'm sure you know Morgan, Ganesha, how pleased they are when devotees are chanting Hare Krishna. I mean, it starts really bringing home. It says when we do the Sankirtan Yagya that all the universal authorities become very happy. You can really appreciate that. And you see how they're all lined up against the forces of evil. And they're really happy when we chant because they're getting a lot of strength from that. It brings up the good in the world, and not only that, but it brings people beyond goodness to transcendental goodness. Are there any questions? Yes, sir.
This question is more relevant to last night's talk, but I thought it had something to do with it tonight. Last night you talked about perception of reality, how difficult it was to perceive a material reality, and how much more difficult it is to perceive a spiritual reality. And on the perception of the material reality, you mentioned virtual reality and the quantum theory. In that context, what do you think of the contention of, say, Capra, that the findings of particle physicists regarding matter and energy are compatible with the Eastern mystics and concepts in the Vedic literature? A. B and C follow from that. So I then need to go beyond that. But B is the ideas of Capra came before probably death. And perhaps they could lead to a modification of a stereotype that science and scientists are anti, say, the pursuit of spirituality.
Anti?
The spiritual.
We don't say that. We always qualify it that we know that there are some scientists who are really sincere scientists, and it's really the scientists who are making the big claims of things which are very dogmatic and not scientific. Kind of making claims which are beyond things they could verify. So they kind of create a kind of blind faith or dogmatism within a scientific concept, which is really not even empirically firm. Just like at one point they were saying God is dead, and they were saying, not every scientist said that. There are many, Einstein said, many others said that there must be an intelligence behind the creation, behind the whole existence, because it's so well organized. I think he made a statement like he'd like to know the intelligence that created this whole arrangement. So it's not that we're against science, but that we're against science when it takes on a role bigger than what it's supposed to. As far as the quantum problem question, Rasaraj Prabhu in Bombay, he's writing a lot of, he's doing a lot of research in this topic, and he's done a number of calculations. I'm not really qualified to, I'm not a scientist, physicist or anything to really comment. But I understand that the fact that they consider consciousness to be the next realm, that definitely seems to be very compatible with the Eastern thought. And that's something that the Vedas say, that consciousness is the origin and matter, it comes from consciousness or spirit. So to that extent, there's definitely some harmony as far as how to actually mathematically and otherwise make it work out. That the restaurant is working on that. If you're really interested in going into the technical side of it, you might, I forget what his scientific name is, but if you write a letter to our Bombay Center about it, he'd be very happy. And then you can get the name from Sutra Lakshman. And he's doing a lot on that side. Jai Sisi Nitai Gaura, Jai Radha, Balava, Jai Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Ki
Jai.
Hare Krishna. Consciousness is good. and one effective. Although ethically we don't want to present anything which is not authorized by the Sadhu Shastra. Somehow or another somebody comes, even if it's... I heard for instance there was some devotees in Poland. They told me that there were three young boys that came at a fair, and the devotees had set up a book table there. And they came and they're looking at the books and they created like kind of a distraction. And one of the boys stole Bhagavad Gita. And they stole it and they took it off and they were like laughing and how they'd actually, you know, put a number on the devotees. But later on, they read the Bhagavad Gita. And you know, one read and the other and they said, wow, this is amazing. And then they said those three youths, They all came and surrendered. And he said, two of them are my disciples and one Sri Dayananda's Maharaj's disciples. So sometimes people come, they came being naughty. They came, you know, stealing the book. But there was another situation that one book distributor told me that they saw some pickpocket in Peru, doing the profession, and then carrying a funny kind of a shopping bag and put something in there, and then I had to watch out for this. Later on, they were distributing, and then they saw a person come up, and so I want one of those books. Came up with a funny looking shopping bag and took out a purse, you know, and gave some money and bought the book, and it was like. So, and there was another thing where a person was very frustrated and really frustrated in life. Said, "Life is hopeless. There's just no hope in life. Everything is lousy. I don't know what to do." And just said, "Let me just pass the time. I'm going to go and fish. You know, just to get some peace of mind." Went with a fishing pole. Went down and was fishing and, wow, I got a big one, you know, and as the pole was bending and I'm going to take it in carefully so the rope doesn't break and bring it closely. This is not a fish, it's a box. I said, what is this? And then they took the box out of the water and opened up the box and it was like a airtight, inside the box there was the Bhagavad Gita. Read the Gita and surrendered to Krishna. So he was looking for peace of mind, you know, I wanted to go fishing and he got it. So there's, you know, some really amazing stories how people come. I know what, I put an ad in the paper and in the one ads in Calcutta and that if people want to go overseas, we have a worldwide, you know, missionary effort. And so we got hundreds and hundreds of people. So out of that, a number of people actually joined our missionary effort. And after about 5 years, one came and said, you know, I answered that ad. I said, kind of a desire that I could go to the West. So, I mean, maybe that's your... But then we sent that devotee, he went to the West, and actually it says, oh, it's actually the preaching opportunities are better in India, so he went back to India. And later on again, they requested he help in the West. So, now he's in the West. It's like that. It's not really... We said there's an opportunity, and many people did take the opportunity, but that's not... Sometimes... attract people's attention, you might use different things, but I think you have to be ethical and not actually present anything false. But different people have different interests, and we try to fulfill those interests, and sometimes Krishna brings people in amazing different ways. Who could expect someone fishing to get a box with the Bhagavad Gita? Any last question? Who?
Tim. Had a question.
Tim.
I'm sorry, if we transcend our material nature and come to our spiritual nature in this life now, then do we actually continue to live in the material world any longer if we're seeing everything as spiritual? If it becomes that mode, do we then, does the material world really exist still?
Well, it's a kind of, it's a gradual development. Even though you're acting in the spiritual platform and you can see things from a spiritual perspective, you, as long as you have a material body, you're still able to see the external reality also. Finally, when you become fully realized and you get your spiritual body, you don't need the material body, then you can see things in the spiritual platform. And if you're like Narada Muni preaching in the material world, then you can see the material reality. I don't know how, I couldn't imagine the perspective from which he's seeing it, but he's able to communicate with people. I would think he doesn't see the things the same way we do, but I don't think there's any way to describe what a liberated soul sees when he's here in the material world to a conditioned soul. I think that's something we have to realize. But so they are able to... The spirit, since it's the finest level, it's able to relate with all the grosser levels. It's like if you have, you know, a really expensive radio that has 25 bands, you can get all the bands, you know, but if you have only the cheap one that has 6-7 bands or 3 bands, then you can only get those. So when you have the spiritual body, then you can get everything, it has all the bands, you can get it, you know, every level is available. But when you only have a human vision, then, you know, we only have a certain, certain bands that we can actually communicate on, and but since we have the spiritual, we are spiritual, but we're just covered by the body, we can develop our consciousness and build it up to actually becoming aware of Krishna. When we realize Krishna, then we get our spiritual body, then we can realize, we can see everything in his perspective. Vyasadeva had such a vision in the first canto of Bhagavatam, where he could see the material world, the spiritual world, he could see the entire existence and all its different levels. Lord Brahma also had a similar realization. And then he realized that there's the Devi Dham, the material world, there's the world of Lord Shiva, there's the world of Vaikuntha, and then there's the world of Krishna, Hari Dham and Golok Dham. So he saw these four levels of existence. So one can get this spiritual realization even while we're in this material body. But once you get that realization, well, then you start to see things differently. But you can still relate with this world so long as you're in this world. And when it's time for you to go back to the spiritual world, then you, this body is no longer needed, and you can regain your original spiritual body and go back to the spiritual world. So while we're here, we're trying to, we don't want to just go back alone. We'd like to see a lot of our friends and a lot of the conditioned souls here be able to get back also. As many, everyone, to our ability to give the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to everyone. Maybe the prasadam, the lamp could be shared. Is that all right? Shri Prabhupada ki jai.